since Jim has to leave to get on another call, why don't we go ahead and get started? And as usual, if everyone could just interfere with.
Jim Hanafy with DARS.
Donnie Green with the North Central Texas Area Agency on Aging.
And Paula Modges, and I guess I'm a housing advocate.
You guess, Paula.
I'm not sure what my official rating is.
Well, thank you for being on the call. Ashley Schweikart and Elizabeth Yevich, as usual, from TDHCA are on. And we are also being joined for some of the homelessness discussion by the coordinator of our Texas Interagency Council for the Homeless, which is Colin McGrath. Colin,
hello.
Hi.
Hello, everyone.
So in case you guys have any questions on that portion that I can't answer, he's here just to provide that expertise. But why don't we start with our old business? What I did is I created, based on the discussion of the community-based housing that we talked about last time, and drafting some recommendations that mirror the language that was submitted by HHSC to CMS. That's the first two recommendations that are on that the service committee draft recommendations document. And then the third recommendation, which is about broadening definitions of integration, I actually wanted to bring that one back to the committee because I did some more research into the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs and, you know, more into how possible other models of housing could even be done under the guise of the federal regulations that we have to abide by. Because if you all recall from the last committee meeting, we discussed that there are advocates on kind of either sides of the issue of what, how do you define integration, and that some would promote the definition as the proportion of properties for persons with disabilities within a larger community. And so I was trying to explore how that definition would actually play out realistically. So thinking of, you know, where there would be a group home within a community or an assisted living facility within a community. And then I tried to take, given that thought, I tried to take that and see if it was even possible to use that definition with TDHCA funding. And I hope that this wasn't too much complexity for everyone, but I looked into our housing tax credit program regulations because that is our largest funding source for multifamily development. And it seems, given the lack of clarity around IRS regulations, that at this time, I don't believe that the housing tax credit funding source could even be used for the types of properties that we had discussed being ones that solely serve a special needs population such as persons with disabilities. So I think we maybe need to have a further conversation about how as the service committee, we want to formulate a recommendation about integration, because I think that specifying solely focusing on TDHCA's integrated housing rule is not perhaps the best way of going about things, just because given TDHCA's funding source, I don't think that that there would be an ability to expand the scope of integrated housing rule in the way that we were discussing last time. Everyone following me?
Can you give me just a little background? I apologize for missing the last one about what was discussed as it related to that definition.
Well, we discussed the fact that the use of the way that the integrated housing rule, that is a rule that TDHCA uses for its multifamily development program, The way that that is written is to discuss integration as a proportion of units set aside for persons with disabilities within a single development.
Right.
And I know that other people in terms of within the disability advocacy community have considered integration as properties within a larger community. So a larger definition of looking at which would then, given that second definition of properties within a larger community, I think that there is part of the advocacy community feels as though there could be a property that solely serves persons with disabilities.
I see, okay.
That would still be considered integrated and still be considered as promoting the Olmsted decision of choice within the community.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that I disagree with either advocacy group here. I think that we need to recognize that there are multiple perspectives on how you create choice when it comes to community housing options. However, the way that the committee discussed recommendations for the biennial plan last conference call was talking about expanding the scope of the integrated housing rule, TDHCA's integrated housing rule, and I think that may be too narrow of a focus for this because in doing the research, I don't think that TDHCA could adopt a different definition of integration that would allow solely special needs populations to allow properties that are solely serving special needs populations. I think that our federal regulations are still, the definitive ruling is still out as to whether that would even be allowed currently.
Okay, that makes sense.
And does someone else join us?
Yes, Ashley, I'm sorry, this is Bill. I just came from another conference and I have Jenny Swinton here with me. I noticed that you had OCR on the agenda.
Yes.
That is her area of expertise.
Wonderful. And what was her name again?
Jenny. Ashley, I emailed you about the OCR stuff.
Yes, Jenny. Hi. Thank you so much for sending me that information.
Sure.
And I will, and yeah, we can come back to it if we want to expand upon that discussion. Right now, Bill, just I don't know how long you've been on, but we were talking about the Service Committee draft recommendations document and the recommendation number 3 on definitions of integration.
Okay, great.
So,
well, this is a really kind of controversial issue within the disability community, but
yes,
I, thank you. From the independent living perspective, just, you know, really we're all about choice.
Yes.
And I can tell you that, you know, then we're kind of arbitrarily taking away a choice. The people that we're transitioning right now from are helping to relocate from nursing homes and whatnot, more often than not, their choice is assisted living because they feel a little more secure.
And
they have a lot more freedom than a nursing home, but they feel a little more secure in assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we honor that. We honor whatever their choice is. And so I'm leaning toward a broader definition of integrated housing myself for representing the independent living community because I get to do that.
Right. And I think that was something that at the last conference call was agreed upon that the council wants to somehow promote a broader definition of integration. I think it's the way in which we do that I wanted to readdress because I think that trying to put a broader definition of integration just by looking at TDHCA's integrated housing rule is too narrow a way of going about it, and I don't think actually does us any good given IRS federal regulations for our housing funding.
Yeah, and I think that there are barriers on both sides, not just on the housing side, but also on the long-term services and support side with the Medicaid waiver for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
They're prohibited from receiving any kind of services in housing options with four more unrelated individuals. So it sounds like there are some barriers in terms of IRS guidance. There are barriers in terms of what CMS will allow. And
actually, Donnie, it's Mark Gold. These are really not CMS rules. These are state rules on how we've defined that. And it's more than four. We have 3 and 4 bed group home type of settings. But as a state, and we've debated going up to 6 beds, 7 beds, whatever beds. But there's way we do it in the state.
Okay, and thanks for that clarification. I think there may be value in just recognizing those issues as barriers. I don't think it's feasible for the committee to make those kinds of sweeping changes, but if we could just note that there are different perspectives regarding, you know, what integration means and what families and consumers would prefer.
And I think that may be the best, I think that Donnie, I understand where you're coming from, and I think that may be the best way to incorporate this discussion into the Bioennial Plan is through our chapter that is devoted to barriers, and that we can basically lay out on the table what the current status is and the way that current federal and state regulations as they exist, how they determine housing options for persons that require long-term services and supports. So I think we can make that discussion happen without having to put that within our policy recommendations chapter unless people want to make a policy recommendation. Do we have any discussion on that?
I just have a general question, Ashley. This is
sure.
Bill.
Yep.
When we're kind of putting policy out there, is there room for us to say, you know, that we have an ideal situation that we would consider integrated, and then in the absence of that ideal situation, what would be acceptable? For example, you know, we could say 50% integrated, you know, with that apartment complex or a multi-person living unit, but we may understand that might not be available in some, and then we could slip into you know, consumer choice or maybe even a different percentage. Again, I'm not trying to lead the question. I just want to know if that's something that's been done in the past or something we're considering.
So you're saying more of a what the council would envision to be an ideal world situation.
Correct. And then, I mean, because, you know, Texas has, you know, limited resources across the state. And so in the absence of that ideal situation, you know, what do we consider acceptable, and everything else would, as far as integration goes, would not be acceptable? For example, I have a place I work with a place in Beaumont, and they have a 15-unit facility, and every single person in that facility has mental illness. And I, you know, that of course that's not integrated, and that's not ideal. But without that, they don't have a place to live.
Sure. That's a good question. I mean, what do other members of the committee think?
I think there's some merit to that. The only challenge is what we might think is ideal. You know, somebody else may say, well, this small group living arrangement is ideal. You know,
mm-hmm.
But I certainly think, you know, going at what's the philosophical underpinnings of integration, and these are you know, I won't say best examples, but these are examples that we think come closest to it.
I tend to agree with that, because I think if we don't start to get moving toward change and get the issue out there, then, you know, all we're doing is putting it as a barrier, which may indicate that we will or won't address it. And so I'd rather see it go you know, in a section that's a little more progressive.
Well,
I think both places, but I mean, you know.
Yeah. My vision of the ideal is that persons with disabilities would have access to a continuum of housing options.
I agree. I mean, I think there's two things going on here. I don't think it's up to us to say what's ideal or not what ideal because, again, it's about individual choice. Mm-hmm. And a state has made a decision to recognize certain types of living as qualified community residences. For example, the state has accepted assisted living as a qualified community residence, and that's in all of our waivers as that type of definition. So I think there's a conversation where you just philosophically talk about all individuals have the right to live in the most integrated setting. And you talk about that on a high level of areas. And then you talk about having that continuum of services so people have their choice in how they want to live in the most integrated setting that works for them. And you separate the two, the philosophy from talking about specific residents or facilities or community placements or neighborhoods.
Okay.
I'm just reading something from the Bazleton Center, and again, I'm quickly just looking at it with regard to mental health, and I presume that this applies to other persons with disabilities. And some of the wording they have chosen, again, haven't read the whole thing, is the most integrated possible. Not sure. If we can even get down to that granular level, but I think that brings up that continuum that that you guys just spoke of.
Okay, so perhaps then that this would require just a change to the typical recommendation format that we have used in the past in terms of this needs to be more of a statement about the council's. It's about philosophy, but it's about what should be promoted by, I guess, the state of Texas moving forward. So it's a general thing, not a specific recommendation. But yeah, I can certainly write something up and see how you guys feel about it. I didn't mean to skip over the first two recommendations. Those were just based on feedback from the last conference call. Those two were taken from the letter that HHSC sent to CMS. So I just want to make sure, though, that everyone likes the way that recommendation one and two are provided. Or if not, we can edit that. Thoughts on those two?
Ashley, I didn't have much opportunity to really spend much time with these recommendations.
Okay.
Is it possible to defer a...
Yes, if you want to send something by email, once you have a chance, that would be perfectly fine. As always, you know, I know I give you guys a lot of stuff to work with, you know, in terms of I give you a lot of supporting materials, and if you ever feel the need to, you know, take an extra couple days with that material and then provide comments, please do. You know, you can always send it to me by email or give me a call.
I skimmed it and I didn't make any notes in the margin that said eek. That's a pretty good sign, but would really like to give you something more definitive.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that sounds great. And then in terms of the recommendation on the CSHS OCR pilot, that one I was crafting, but I figured that, and I didn't have anything to provide to you guys today, but I think that that one was pretty straightforward because I think that the decision that the committee came up with was that we want to tell the legislature, hey, we think this pilot is a good idea. We like the fact that you expanded it through the rider in the last legislative session. Keep going. I mean, was that the basic gist of like the let's keep going, or did we want to have anything that had more specific recommendations about the pilot itself?
Yes, bring it to the Dallas area.
Bring it statewide, basically. Okay, I just want to make sure that we didn't have anything that, because I gave you guys the background information about the pilot, and I didn't think anyone had any problems with the way that the pilot was set up currently. Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. That one seems like it's an easy one then to go forward with. Okay. Before we get to the next item on the agenda, which is the discussion on the homelessness policies, I just wanted to make sure that everyone had a chance to at least glance at the outline for the 2012-2013 biennial plan. Mm-hmm. And really all it is it's a table of contents showing how we're going to break down the chapters. And then I have a couple bullet points on each page that is the placeholder for that chapter. And so I just wanted to make sure that the outline looked like it was a good one for you guys.
I thought it did.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, if there's any edits to be made to the outline, you go ahead and give me an email or a call and we can work on it. But I think we should then move on to the discussion on policies for homeless persons with disabilities. So I created a document that I called TICH Draft Texas State Plan to End Homelessness, Data Collection and Housing Recommendations. And basically most of that was taken from the TICH plan itself, but I wanted to break things down in a way that addressed the questions that were asked at the last conference call. So one of the things was asked was, you know, how are we collecting data on the status of a homeless person that has a disability? So are we collecting information on the disability status when homeless information is collected? And so that first part, which is the first page of this document, I was trying to kind of break down what the limitations have been. The first being that right now the way that the homeless management information systems, or HMIS data, is collected, it's been a barrier for the state to be able to access statewide data from HMIS because each individual continuum of care submits that data to HUD. HUD does not then give that data to the state of Texas. So that is definitely a concern that in terms of being able to just have the information at hand on a statewide basis of disability status of homeless individuals. A second potential limitation is that another way of collecting data on homeless persons is the point in time count. And the point in time counts are done by each local continuum of care. Unfortunately, this may not be entirely comprehensive, but another thing is that the point in time count information doesn't always ask nuanced questions about a person's disability status. So they do ask if a person is severely mentally ill or has had a chronic substance abuse issue, but there aren't questions about if the person has a mobility impairment, if they have a hearing impairment, if the person is a person with IED. those kind of breakdowns of disability status are not found in point-in-time count information. So that's another way that we're a little bit limited. And then I provided a little bit of information on how our Balance of State organization, the Texas Homeless Network, also does a survey to provide a little bit richer analysis of our Texas homeless population. But they're looking at only about a third of the state's population, mostly rural Texas. So we're not getting that same richness of data from the urban areas at this time. So I think that we're starting out in a place where it's going to be hard for us to have data on persons with disabilities that are homeless. And that could be a barrier if we want to talk about it as a barrier in our plan, trying to collect that information. That's the first page. And then the next information talks about what data was analyzed by the TICH in their plan, in terms of how income, housing markets are related to the rate of homelessness. So I thought that was very interesting information about areas that have basically a higher rent income ratio within the state are reporting higher rates of homelessness. So I think that there's the data to back that up. And so they provide that information to us. And then I also provided to you guys what the TICH state plan to end homelessness has as their recommendations regarding housing. So they have a chapter about affordable housing and supportive services, and I'm providing you guys here the recommendations that they made so you can see what is already being put forth. So there's all that, I'm kind of giving you the research to see if we want to make some more specific recommendations on persons with disabilities who are homeless, if we want to use anything that the TICH plan has already put forward, because I know that we had the discussion last time that we did want to talk about homelessness in the plan because we talked about the cycling of persons through institutions, and then they may be relocated back into the community, but if they don't have stable housing or if they don't have support services, they may end up in homelessness. They might cycle through the criminal justice system. They might end up back in institutions or state hospitals. And so we wanted to address that. So does anyone have any further comment on how we want to use this information for the plan?
Ashley, this is Bill from Department of State Health Services. One of the projects that I was participating with at the beginning were these recovery-oriented systems of care. I think you guys have heard me talk about those before, where there are groups of service organizations ranging from housing to substance abuse to mental health to physical disabilities to peers to state and local agencies trying to get together to serve as a group to assist individuals. So for example, if somebody had a substance use disorder and also had a housing problem, you would actually have two service providers right there together available to assist, so that one specific group wouldn't have to necessarily provide all services to the individual. I know it's for a lot of places across Texas is truly in its infancy. I mean, they're still rolling out across the state. However, it looks like we're moving in that direction. We're doing it through our substance use and abuse division. And there are places like Houston, from what I understand, are just completely up and running. They're taking people from a variety of service organizations or identifying specific needs, bringing them to the table and actually being able to serve them in a multifaceted way. I think eventually, if they do get federal funding, that might be a recommendation that we would make to assist persons with disabilities with getting housing. Just something to keep in mind, because when we think about the homeless population, the needs can be very diverse.
And so you were mentioning Houston as an example of using the recovery oriented systems of care.
Mm-hmm.
Have they provided any reports, any documents on kind of their how they've been going about this that maybe we could use as an example?
Sure. They have. I don't know how detailed, like say, their documentation is, but I can certainly get my hands on it and I can send it to you.
Yeah, if you could do that, I think that would be great in order for us to look at, you know, what are some practices across the state that could be either talk about as a best practice or the council can look at it and say, should we recommend that the thing that Houston is doing should be replicated statewide?
Sure. I know that they're in, to my knowledge, in 16 different communities across Texas. So they are growing. So yeah, I can get that for you, no problem.
Great. That'd be great. Other comments?
I guess I wanted to just insert that not only if you think that approximately 70% of the disability population is unemployed, and then you add to that that the majority of those are trying to live on $698 a month, two problems occur, homelessness and also the loss of independence, because to survive in that kind of a scenario, people have to stay, you know, dependent with families or friends or whatever. And so it's an imposed limit of choices. And maybe we can have a discussion around that issue too, that the barrier to integrated housing is the fact that, you know, the wait list for subsidies is years long, and so people don't even have the option of having their own living environment because they just can't sustain it. So not only does that lead to homelessness, but it also leads to kind of a forced dependency.
Okay. Yeah, I think that kind of enriches our discussion of barriers to integration, definitely. Any other comments? Again, if you guys want to look through this document, and if you want to look through what the state plan to end homelessness has as their recommendations, if there are any that pop out at you that you want to talk more about for this council, or you think we should promote, I please send me an email or call me. So we can make sure that we utilize the work that's already been done by the TICH. I know they've been working very hard on this plan for last year, so we should definitely utilize it if we think that it's really relevant to the council's work as well.
And I could just jump in and say, conversely, if this council, the HHSCC, has guidance, recommendations, suggestions or ways that they think that the TICH should be addressing disabilities as far as they intersect with homelessness, both in our planning and in our future work, because we're not stopping with just a plan, let us know. So either through Ashley, or you can contact me, because we obviously are talking about a population, as one woman just pointed out, you know, 70% people with disabilities are unemployed, and SSI or SSDI are barely enough provide enough funds to help someone stay in a rental unit in Texas. So we have an intersection of populations that we're talking about, so we'd like to keep the conversation up and like to hear more from everyone, all with HHSC. HHSCC.
There we go.
Sorry.
I get that long
call in there.
And yes, if anyone needs Colin's information, I'll send that out to the group so you guys have his contact information. But yeah, so I just wanted to provide this opportunity to continue the discussion on the connection between homelessness and possibly disability status and how those two things, you know, are linked, and if we want to make recommendations on them. So are there any further comments on them? Okay. All right. Do we have any staff research assignments that are separate from the conversation today that people want to throw out there?
Are other states, have any other states, to your knowledge, developed a mechanism for collecting more global data about homeless people with disabilities than just what the consolidated plan, of, you know, provides for?
I can sort of address that question. The first answer is the information on disabilities can't go any farther than Homeless World, the Homeless Management Information System. And as far as I can tell, right now, the universal data standards that HUD issues for the HMIS system aren't that sophisticated. They ask sort of general questions about disabilities, but nothing too particular.
Mm-hmm.
But within that system, there are some states that have worked to consolidate HMIS systems. So, you know, California in the Bay Area, there are something like 17 continuum of care that all have their own systems, and they actually created a data warehouse for those that cluster of jurisdictions.
That's what I was wondering, if they had, you know, if it, another state had its own MIS that they were kind of wedding with the HUD system to get more data.
Right, and that's actually an extremely interesting. So Michigan, they have a statewide HMIS, but they created a data warehouse that pulls in data from other state agencies. But I think they've even pulling in data from their criminal justice system, and I think maybe even their Medicaid system. So they can actually start referencing those data sets against one another.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where really, really, really rich data, especially on disabilities, can come from. So HMIS might not have the power to do that, but if other state agency data sets do have that information, but you don't necessarily know if someone is homeless, if you can reference files against each other and say, know that this same person in HMIS is the same person in the Medicaid system. And Medicaid can tell you this much information about the individuals who we know are homeless based on HMIS, then you have really powerful information. And so we're right now in Texas just working towards the data warehouse. But we do have models from other states to look towards, and I think Michigan is a good example.
And that can certainly be, you know, something that, in terms of using what the TICH plan has recommended, that the council can provide for their own recommendation, is the fact that right now it's a barrier to finding out how many persons with disabilities in Texas are homeless, what's their reason for homelessness, what's keeping them homeless, all those things, the richness of that data, of just the existing need of persons with disabilities that are homeless that we don't have, beyond saying that we know that there's a barrier there because of data limitation, there can certainly be a recommendation that we can make about how we want to overcome that barrier. So,
oh, that would be good.
Okay. I think that we're going to start losing people here in a couple minutes because they have other obligations, and that's totally understandable. There are two dates that I just wanted everyone to keep in mind. The first is our next committee conference call is Wednesday, February 29th. Yes, we're here. Yeah. And so let me know if our normal 10 a.m. start time This one was a little earlier because people scheduled, but if our normal 10 a.m. start time for Wednesday, February 29th, if that's not going to work for you, please send me an email.
Can I just tell you, Ashley, that on the February 29th, there is a huge legislative hearing on Senate Bill 7, which is going to have a tremendous impact on the long-term services system. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thanks for letting me know, Mark. And so are you saying that a lot of people are going to be at that?
I would think you're certainly going to have, I mean, I know either if I'm not going to be physically there, I'm going to be listening in on through the Internet. And I would think there's going to be a lot of individuals who represent Health and Human Services are going to be wanting to listen to that conversation.
And, yeah, do we know the start time on that one?
I don't know. I would assume it's going to start early, I would guess, but I don't have that exact start date. I just know that is the date.
Okay. I'll try to look that up and see if I can find out the start time, and then we can work around that. So I'll look into that. Thank you.
And Ashley, I have a separate conflict. I'm actually doing a workshop from 10 to noon on the 29th.
Okay. All right.
I think I have a morning conflict on the 29th, too. I could do afternoon, but not morning.
At the 29th, though. Yeah, perhaps we'll have to do the 29th then. I'll look into how we could perhaps reschedule that meeting. The last thing I wanted to say is that we have our quarterly in-person meeting coming up in about 2.5 weeks on Monday, March 5th. And so I will be sending out the agenda and starting travel arrangements for everyone tomorrow or the next day. So that was just the last piece of information for everyone.
And Ashley, I have a conflict that day as well. DADS is going to do its on-site monitoring.
Okay.
Starting March 5th.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know, Donnie. All right. Thank you, everyone, so much for attending the call.
Well, thank you, Ashley. You do a great job.